You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
Are you guys worried about Aaron Rodgers like I am?
Every day I worry about him.
I feel like this is none of my business. I'm just going to come right out and say that on the front end. I feel like involving myself in his personal relationships and engagement and possible secret marriage is none of my concern, right? I'm a little worried though, because there was an interview with Shailene Woodley where she said she had not watched a football game before meeting Aaron Rodgers. And I find that impossible to believe. Did you not have PE class? Like, you never seen the Super Bowl? Like, how have you not seen football before Aaron Rodgers? And furthermore, like, do you not shop for insurance? Like, you've never seen State Farm commercials? I feel like maybe he surrounds himself with people that, not him in particular, but like, it's hard for like celebrities and people of note to not be surrounded by people that like know them for what they do and like just fawn over them, right? But I feel like this might be an overcorrection, right? Like, you have to have seen football before Aaron Rodgers, right?
She was like a child star, Billy. I could actually believe this. She grew up in California and was acting from a young age. She was probably very into like the musical theater acting lifestyle. Didn't have a lot of time to watch the Super Bowl. I believe it.
I mean, Greece, do they not have a football team in the high school where Greece takes place? Like, I'm sorry. I find it impossible to believe. And also, like, let's say you're 29 or whatever age she is, right? And you just come upon football right away. Do you like look at it like in awe? Like, oh my God, like what are they doing over there? Like that ball that's shaped weird. Like, wow, look at the coordination. Like, explain this to me. Like, you just come upon football and you didn't know that this was going on and that your boyfriend slash fiance slash husband is like great at it.
The quote is, I don't know him as a football guy. I know him as like the nerd who wants to host Jeopardy. That's the dude I know. And I heard a caged chicken, a muffled fraud from a caged chicken back there somewhere. And I see that Whittingham wants to get in on the fun. I also don't know where Stugatz is. He was counting his money the first hour, and now he's just simply left, maybe just pleased with himself because he invented that a pirate kicked a baseball on a play we were talking about against his team.
I feel like there's a little Stugatz in Woodley. She could have just said, oh, I'm not a big football fan, but she flew by and she's like, never seen a game, never even seen a football before in my entire life.
Yeah. Took a lie three steps too far. How is it, even, you mentioned a child star. There's no universe that you can live in. I understand. If she's from Australia, that's one thing. But an American-born actress was never around a Super Bowl party ever once. That's impossible. It is impossible to have gone through life, be in your 20s, and have never been invited to a Super Bowl party, never been near a Super Bowl party, and even at a Super Bowl party where people aren't caring about football, there's always the one play where everyone turns around, oh yeah, football, and they go back to what they were doing otherwise. Like, there is not a universe in which an American-born child could not have experienced a football game once.
I also kind of question, and again, this isn't our place to do, but now that we're here, I kind of question the whole, I know him as like this nerdy Jeopardy guy. Like, where in Hollywood circles are you hanging out where there's just nerdy Jeopardy people that have access to you? Because the people that have access to you in Hollywood are football players, okay? Like, we're not going somewhere where it's like, oh, here's the Jeopardy section of this party. That's not how this goes when you're on a list and stuff like that. It's NFL players, it's professional athletes, it's Hollywood stars. Were you at like an agency party? Do you guys have the same agent? And you're like, oh, well, how did you get in? It's like, well, I just really like Jeopardy, so they let me into this big Hollywood soiree.
That's not true, Billy. Like, actresses and actors hang out with other artists. Like, they hang out with musicians, like costume designers, painters, like all types of different artists. They don't just hang out with like Jared Goff at a party. That's not what these parties are like. They're all in like this. They're in a scene. That's why it's called like a scene, you know, like scene.
But Ken Jennings is not an artist.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Jeopardy.
Aaron Rodgers isn't Ken Jennings.
The Jeopardy category had one person in it for 45 years, and they're trying to replace him now. Like there is not all these Jeopardy hosts around because there is only one Jeopardy host.
If Ken Jennings was built like a football player and looked like Aaron Rodgers, he might be invited to these parties. Aaron Rodgers also hangs out with other actors and actresses. Like, he's got connections. That's how he gets to the parties. Not just because he's a football player. Like,
wait, well, why does he have those connections?
Okay, it is because he's a football player. But I mean, he's not going to the party as I'm the quarterback of the Packers. He's going to the parties like I'm a part of this scene. I'm famous.
I'm spokesperson for State Farm. Get out of here. I want to host. Now he's getting into these parties.
Billy, when you're in the scene, you don't have to say what you do. People just know who you are.
Ken Jennings is not in the scene.
But if she doesn't know football, she's never watched a football game in her life, how would she know who Aaron Rodgers is?
Because she met him at a party and she was like, oh, what does that guy do? Oh, yeah, he was on Jeopardy last night. I don't know.
There is the remainder of the quote was, quote, I've yet to go to a football game. And before I met him, I had never seen one football game before. I just didn't really grow up with sports, especially American sports. It never really was on my radar. Guillermo, put it on the poll. What Whittingham said, is there a universe where an American born person couldn't have seen a single football game? And also, let's just replay the sound that we wrestled away from ESPN of Keegan-Michael Key meeting Olivia Munn and then realizing that Aaron Rodgers was near Olivia Munn, and this somehow is what happens when someone does know who Aaron Rodgers is.
I was leaving my office one day at Sunset Gower Studios, and I went over to visit a friend of mine who was shooting on the TV show The Newsroom with Jeff Daniels, and I'm looking down the way, and I see Olivia Munn, the beautiful Olivia Munn. She sees me and I see her, and she beelines for me.
Yes.
And she comes up, she goes, hi, I'm Liv, and I'm a big fan of your work. And I said, and I'm Keegan, I'm a big fan of your work and your face and everything else. everything else that's standing right here, I'm a big fan of. And then there's this big kind of hulky, kind of hunky guy standing next to her. I'm not paying attention. She goes, oh, I'd like you to meet my boyfriend, Aaron.
No.
All of a sudden, I couldn't care less who Olivia Munn was. I'm like, I just like look at the guy and I go, I don't even say hello. I just go, NFC North, and then I fall down.
Yes, that's a better
that was
story.
It.
Yes.
And then a week later, we have dinner together. So that made it even better. And then about 6 months after that, he does our Super Bowl special.
Another quote from Woodley. Before Rodgers, she dated a rugby player, and she said, quote, I fall in love with human beings based on who they are, not based on what they do or what sex they are.
Poppycock.
I guarantee if I texted every person in my cell phone contact list, I don't even want to say this because now you guys are going to make me do it. I would find at least one person who has not watched a full football game. Yes, they are aware of what football is. They know what a football is, but they've not seen a football game. There's at least one. There's someone out there.
Guillermo, put it on the poll, please. Have you ever known anyone who uses the word poppycock? Yes or no?
Have you seen what's been going on with Olivia Munn? Because her name is getting dragged through all sorts of tabloids and internet gossip. She's being called a homewrecker because she is reportedly dating John Mulaney, who has since emerged after a very brief residency at the Troubadour in Los Angeles announce a brief tour. That special has got to be incredible that he's working on right now because of his now estranged marriage that's headed towards divorce. And there is a very clear public relations campaign being painted right now in front of the media, and the fact that he went to rehab. He had problems with cocaine, and he had a whole bunch of life stuff. That kind of surprised a lot of people, I felt, because of just his general delivery.
Was it the suit? Was it simply that he performs in a suit that people couldn't have imagined that in rehab?
Well, his whole act is that he's a square. So, like, to go from that to cocaine rehab. Which
Where
is
do
like
I
a
buy the cocaine?
You have any? Two cocaines, please.
Yeah. I think it's, so is it the suit or the act?
It's his voice.
Okay, so it's neither.
It's his voice, really.
That you can't imagine that being cocaine-y.
I'm looking
time for booger sugar.
I've got to admit that I too was surprised by that, and I don't know exactly why I was surprised by that. It can be all those things. It could be the voice and the suit, and it could be the act. It could be all of it.
Just all of him.
Yeah, right. But then I processed everything because I too was surprised because of said voice, and I realized, oh, wildly popular stand-up comedian. That's a hard life. Yeah, I could see how cocaine dependency comes out of that.
And so what are the specifics? I mean, the internet is cruel. So,
like, well, his soon to be ex-wife made it very clear that this was John's decision. I can't even imagine what it must be like for her as she's going through.
That was rare. The statement where it's not mutually amicable, it is rare in celebrity that the statement coming out is, well, we're happy from publicists, we're going different directions, where one person is clearly publicly hurt and just tells everybody, look, my heart is broken here. I was not expecting
It puts it on John. This was John's decision. And then the internet gossip starts that John Mulaney and Olivia Munn are dating, and then people run wild with that stuff, probably fueled by pretty good sources, I would imagine. And now you've got John Mulaney. I think he's got that special. I didn't say it as a joke. It's going to be massive because he was one of these. There aren't very many rock star comedians that can maybe sell out an arena. Sebastian's kind of low-key one of those guys. But Mulaney was right there. Comedian, popular, smart, witty, and was becoming like, oh, he has a new special out. You got to see it. It was appointment television. And now, next level, transcending with this bit of controversy and the rehab stint. I can't imagine what it's going to be like.
This is a terrible thing to say, but that is a good career move.
What, cocaine?
In terms of making yourself more famous.
He's becoming more notorious.
Famous, infamous, the combination of them.
Yeah, there's a bit of, there's darkness there. There's danger there. People are drawn to this type of energy. I want to hear what he has to say. Is he going to address this? Is he going to keep it private? I didn't read any reports of what his residency was like at the Troubadour, but I imagine he always taps into his life experiences and his comedy.
What do you do? In any pub is good pub? Is that kind of where you're headed?
Just famous and infamous, talented, and now dating famously. Like, all that combination. Woodley said she was taken aback. Like, she lives in Hollywood, sees what fame looks like. She said she was taken aback at what happened to her life the moment it became known that Aaron Rodgers was in it. Once you start merging those people, I remember that reading something about Matt Damon talking about how Brad Pitt envied Matt Damon because Matt Damon occasionally, and this was in the age of paparazzi, which was crazier than it is now. I think some of that has dissipated, but now it's just sort of been replaced by internet gossip. It's been replaced by something else. It's not quite paparazzi, although it still is.
Now everybody can be a paparazzi.
Overseas. And I remember Brad Pitt articulating an envy of Matt Damon because he had married not famous and he could occasionally walk somewhere without being bothered, because by marrying Angelina Jolie, what happens is you supersize the fame, you supersize all of the stuff that happens around that. And so now drag, impropriety scandal, we can talk about you, we could gossip. You just saw what happened in the segment we were talking about, where we're trying to talk about simply the art or the excellence of a golfer, and immediately the soap opera catches our attention and we're talking about something else. If you start adding multiples of fame, and I mean, first of all, didn't he just get, just listening to me now when I tell you rehab and now this, didn't he just get more interesting to you?
100%. Yes,
his art was plenty interesting, he's funny to listen to, but now it's not just funny and it's not just square. And you got to imagine, I was, Scott's, one of the things that I was really looking forward to after seeing, you heard me marvel at Louis C.K. going on Saturday Night Live, braver than Bill Burr during what already feels like a different time, and hitting pedophilia and Palestine. And there was some third topic. Like, he just went after rail. He went after rail after rail, and he did it deftly. I was so looking forward to what the creative evolution of Louis C.K. was going to be coming out of that. But he can't come out of that, or he hasn't been able to come out of that. So I am looking forward to whatever. Man, comedy is produced. It's the dark arts. Like, that is a space where pain births all sorts of art. So yes, I'm looking forward to see what that births, how honest it is, and if he can find the funny in it at a time that it's so damn hard to find the funny, Stugatz. It takes so much talent right now to find the funny, just because your audience is going into the arena with this film of sadness and sickness and scared, like everything that's happening around us. We're so desperate to laugh, but everyone's got some sort of depression on them just by, you know, the world feels like it's caving in on you.
Don't you think that saying that someone has a drug addiction makes them more interesting is kind of dangerous, though? Like, is it not in a sense glorifying that, or even like legitimizing the trope that someone has to have something difficult that they go through to be interesting or to be like funny or to impress us more?
For me, it's the juxtaposition of, wait a minute, I thought you were something different because of the packaging. Like, your whole act was something that was totally different. I don't know. Did Tiger Woods get more interesting with sex addiction and drug addiction and going from famous to infamous, from somebody who could do who could also give us an inspirational tale? Man, we love a redemption story. We love a redemption story.
Yeah, but I think what Jess is saying is she's concerned. Like, you're saying, hey, do drugs, you're more interested. No, go to rehab, no, you're more. No, and you're not saying
I'm saying scandal, all of it. I'm saying humanity, mistakes. I'm saying you're not just a suit and a voice and an act. There's something else there that's human and flawed.
So to close the loop, Shailene Woodley's full of shit, right?
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Don Lebatard.
Tony, try to explain yourself. Pineapple does not belong on pizza. It's yellow. I know cheese is kind of orangish yellow, but the kind of yellow a pineapple is, nobody wants that on their pizza. It's gross. Explain yourself.
Stugatz.
This is a hill that I am willing to die on. This is a hill that I have put the flag in the ground and said, this is my hill. Nobody can come close. The reason is not the color, Chris. I think that's where you're mistaken. It's the flavor. So what I do is I get a pepperoni and pineapple, and that you get the salty and the sweet flavor together, and it creates an umami desired taste. And that's what I think you're missing, is that you don't like sweet with salty.
Right. I don't drink orange juice with my pizza. I don't drink pineapple juice with my pizza. It's because I'm eating pizza. I'm not here for the fruit.
This is the Don Lebatard Show with the Stugatz.
HBO does the best stuff that you will find, Stugatz. And so it's not surprising to hear that Back on the Record with Bob Costas is coming out Friday, July 30th at 11 p.m. Eastern. And I'm sure it will be excellent, because HBO and Bob Costas don't do things that aren't excellent. It'll be available to stream on HBO Max, but it's going to start on HBO. Bob Costas joins us now. Thank you, as always, Bob, for making the time. And before I ask you about some of the things going on in the world, what are you eager to say and tackle here that you haven't already eagerly said and tackled? Because you've done everything in this industry. So with this show, what is the inspiration for wanting to do this, and what do you want to accomplish with it?
Dan, I'm not trying to check a box that I previously haven't checked. At this point in my career, I don't want to work as hard or be on as often as I used to be. That wouldn't be appropriate for a number of personal and professional reasons. You know, you have a prime chunk of your career, but if you're still capable of doing some things, then you should do them in kind of a different fashion. So I just want to go back to the things that I most enjoy doing. Later this week, I'm going to do two Red Sox-Yankees games, and they're actually letting us back in the ballpark. So Jim Cott and I will do the games from Fenway Park. I just enjoy doing baseball. I know the audience for that is much smaller than when I did the World Series and other things. And certainly everything that you do on HBO is to a boutique type of audience, specific audience. But as you said, HBO is known for quality, and that includes HBO Sports. The title of the show tells you that we're not trying to reinvent the wheel here. The title of the show is Back on the Record. The show I used to have 15 years ago or so on HBO was called On the Record. I hated to leave HBO, but at that time, the hierarchy there understandably said, you got to choose. You can't be on two cable networks. And the baseball network had just come into existence, and they wanted me to be part of it, and I have now for more than a decade. So I chose baseball, but it was a really difficult choice because of all the things you said, because of the quality of HBO and the working environment. So now circumstances have changed. They came back to me and said, what would you like to do? I said, I don't want to do it weekly. I don't want to do it monthly. Let's do it quarterly. And that was the idea. Then COVID pushed back what were to have been the first two shows this year. So we're going to get four of them in just to get four in 2021 in consecutive months, starting in July through October. And then next year it'll become quarterly. So the sorts of things that you would expect, one-on-one interviews that have some substance but also are entertaining. There'll be panel discussions. There'll be some commentary. And unlike situations where I'm on someone else's show, here I'll be able to control the content 100%. So there you go.
Bob, what a great place for you to arrive at, though, where you're picking and choosing what it is you want to do and when you want to do it.
You've been there for a while, haven't you?
Yeah, I've been at that space in my head for a while. In fact, before things got a little bit sideways at NBC, they're better now, I'm happy to say, but before they got a little sideways, the whole idea was that I would have an emeritus role, like Tom Brokaw had for many years in news. I would be that to sports. So I had intended, when I signed my last contract with NBC in 2012, I had intended that the 2016 Olympics would be my last, that eventually I'd stop being on Sunday Night Football, and I'd move into the mode that I'm pretty much in now.
Are you going to have correspondence? What are you going to be doing with others?
Generally speaking, we won't have correspondence. But if there is a situation that calls for something to be reported, then we will turn to people, I don't want to mention names now, but recognizable people with real credentials in sports journalism to do those kinds of pieces that I used to do on the record and that they do on Real Sports with Brian Gumbel, if it's called for in an individual instance.
Stugatz was saying here before you came on, he was talking about, he was saying that it's impossible to enforce what happened at the Red Sox-Yankees game here, where the fan who threw a baseball at the left fielder is now banned from all baseball games everywhere in the United States. He cannot go to Major League Baseball games, professional baseball games. What do you think should happen there? What do you make of what happened this weekend in baseball, both with the postponement of Padres-Nationals because there were gunshots nearby, and in general with the hostility that fans seem to have toward players in basketball and elsewhere where they're throwing things at the entertainers?
Well, on the second one about the Padres-Nationals, as we know, it's unrelated to the game itself, unrelated to baseball. It just happened outside the ballpark, and that's part of the spate of gun violence that is all over the country. And guns are one part of it, yes. But you could have however hundreds of millions of guns we have in this country, and this is not a pro-NRA statement. Some of it has to do with the attitudes of those with the guns, the disregard for life, the sheer depravity that we see being played out in too many instances. Now, when it comes to fans, there's always been unruly fan behavior, but for whatever reason, post-pandemic, I don't know that it's fully behind us, but people are back in the arenas and ballparks, some of it obviously has to do, and I'm not a psychologist or sociologist, but some of it has to do with some sort of pent-up emotion or resentment that built up during the worst days of COVID. But I would also think that it has to do with social media and the way we talk about sports now. You know, somebody mentioned the other day, and I knew it, but I hadn't thought about it, Jerry West, Mr. Clutch, played in 8 or 9 NBA Finals with the Lakers, and his team won only one of them. And his West Virginia team lost the NCAA championship by a single point. would Jerry West be Mr. Clutch today, or would people be haranguing on him the way they're haranguing on Chris Paul now? That sort of toxic tone, not like we hope our team wins, but we demand our team wins, and we'll hold extremely accomplished people to impossible standards of perfection, and then a Twitter mob of some kind will descend upon them, usually ignorantly, for the slightest misstep or perceived misstep. All of those things, you know, create a witch's brew where people think they're able to act out in any way they want. I don't know how effective what you mentioned is going to be, that this guy who threw the baseball into Verdugo's back is banned for life. Are they going to have facial recognition at every ballpark in the major leagues? What if the guy puts on a disguise? Or is there a list, like a no-fly zone? You got to show an ID. Now, is everybody going to have to show an ID plus their ticket to get into the ballpark? You have to show up 3 hours before the game.
I feel like Bob was blaming me there for everything.
I mean, you're the public voice that's very vicious to Chris Paul.
Well, I just want him to win. I mean, win a title. If you want to call him one of the great point guards of all time, Bob, you got to win an NBA championship. Right now, in the Hall of Fame, he's in that Allen Iverson room, Bob, and where I want him to move to, okay, is the Isaiah Thomas Magic Johnson room. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, look, that's a legitimate point.
With the great Stu. Thanks.
That's a legitimate point. Those things can all be discussed. You know, if we're talking about Joe DiMaggio and Ted Williams way back, you know, Williams has his advantages over DiMaggio. One of the advantages DiMaggio has over Williams is all the world championships, and Ted's Red Sox only won one pennant. But we used to not blame that on single people. What you just mentioned, Stugatz, is a legitimate sports conversation. What I'm talking about more is the tone of a lot of it. That's all.
Are fans meaner, or do they just have more access?
I think it's both. I think that when we talk about social media and the worst of it, it's a meeting ground, but it also then quickly becomes a breeding ground where these kind of attitudes are amplified and even validated. Again, there's not any one factor, and I'm not a sociologist, but all these things are factors that go into creating some kind of witch's brew of circumstances that leads, at its worst individual instances, leads to stuff, the worst stuff that we've seen.
Do you find yourself, Bob, because I know this is happening to me, I've got a great life, I'm otherwise pretty happy, but the last couple of years have felt like a sickness, I am scared, I see, and I don't know whether it's just getting old, like every generation has its issues. I'm sure it wasn't very pleasant to be living during World War II, but I just find myself carrying around a low level of anxiety what I imagine depression feels like if you're locked in it all the time, just because I'm scared of everything that's happening in the world.
Well, we're more aware of it. That's obvious. When everything, or seemingly everything, it really is only a small fraction of what goes on, but a larger fraction than we used to see, is available on video or is reported about because somebody sees it and puts it on social media, then mainstream media picks up on it if they find it interesting. I think we are confronted by more of what is anxiety-provoking and concerning and even horrifying in the world. We're confronted by more of it than we used to be.
You're a 19-time Emmy winner. Is any one of them more important to you than the other?
The first one. The first one I got was sometime in the mid-80s, and at that time, the Sports Emmy Awards were televised, and they would have, you know, Robert Klein would be the host or a presenter, and one year Dennis Hopper, I remember, was a presenter. It was kind of a cool thing, and Alan Thicke was the host, and everybody dressed up. This was like a black tie thing, not just suits. It was like the Academy Awards or the Emmys, cocktail dresses, black tie, the whole deal. And I was nominated in the same category as Al Michaels and Dick Enberg, you know, some of the real reigning giants of the industry at that time. And somehow I won. And that was tremendous validation. You know, it was just, wow, how did this happen? To even be nominated with these people would have been great. So the first one is the one I remember best, I guess.
As awkward and clumsy and unprofessional as my transition was from apocalyptic fear to asking him about Emmys, what did Stugatz just text you, Mike, that while Bob Costas was talking, While Bob Costas was talking very eloquently about the things that are producing anxiety in America and beyond, what did he text you?
Yeah, during your enlightened conversation, I got a text from Stugatz that said, Todd Gurley Ravens, to which we all had to search for what he meant, because there's no report saying that Todd Gurley signed with the Ravens. He was just texting me about a visit Todd Gurley is presently having with the Baltimore Ravens.
According to Adam Schefter, I think they, I think it's a one-year deal now, Mike, so he gets a chance to prove himself again. Right, it's a big deal, Mike. Todd Gurley to the Ravens.
Prove it. I love a one-year prove-it deal.
What did you want to ask Costas?
Bob, I'm wondering, because you won so many of those awards, when did you arrive at getting bored with winning Emmys?
I guess I should say the boilerplate things. It's always a thrill. It's always an honor to be nominated. You know, the last couple of times they did it virtually, and I'm doing less, and I don't think I was nominated any of those times. Would have been easier to skip out when they do it virtually as opposed to having to show up. But one of the best things about the Emmys is that you're in the presence of all the other people who you know and generally respect in the industry. So that kind of get-together is an important thing. But as I said, I'm not jaded about it, Stugatz, but it's different when you're 34, 35 years old and it's your first one, as opposed to when it's happened a few times before.
Update, even though Stugatz just cited an Adam Schefter tweet, there is no such tweet. We are still scrambling to confirm what Stugatz meant by $5, Todd Gurley Ravens.
$5 for reading $5 for reading the internet wrong. I love this juxtaposition of the best broadcaster in the world with the worst broadcaster in the world. Like,
well,
I just
don't be so hard on yourself.
By the way, update. And I say this only to make another point, because it doesn't matter to me. It's 29 Emmys, Stugatz, not 19.
I'm sorry.
You're off by double digits, but here's the point I'm making. People, quote, research through Wikipedia or whatever. I saw it somewhere. I saw a release somewhere. I saw something on Twitter. Now, this is inconsequential. My Emmy total is inconsequential. But you realize how many people actually with certitude are armed with information that is 100% not credible. And you know what one of the biggest aspects of this is, whenever someone says something that gets someone else's nose out of joint, then comes the headline, Dan Le Batard goes on rant or tirade, and it's completely out of context, doesn't take into account all the qualifiers that he or I may have said, and then a small portion of it becomes part of the story that follows the clickbait headline, and then 1,000 people comment on it with the absolute assurance that they know exactly what Dan Le Batard said, and they know exactly what they can extrapolate from that to make whatever other point they want to make, and you realize then you're in a house of mirrors.
I mean, it says 19 on the sheet of paper in front of me. Chris, you want to button that shit up, man. It's a bad look, man. It was a
fake SportsCenter tweet that Stugatz got fooled by.
That's unfortunate. They should sign Todd Gurley, though. A motivated Gurley, one-year deal, man. A prove-it deal, Dana.
Bob, what do you you sound, and you are someone who is very professional. You sound like you find it a little bit wearying, everything that's happening with journalism, sports journalism, facts, all of it.
Yeah, a little bit. But I think, especially if you've been lucky enough, as I have, to have had a career that you only could have dreamed of, and now you're just trying to do, on a limited basis, the things that are truest to you, the best you can hope for is you kind of annex your own little patch of ground. And on this patch of ground, I'm going to do what I do the way I want to do it. And to fair-minded people who actually watch it in full, it'll speak for itself. But I can't turn this whole thing around. You know, it's like trying to turn an ocean liner around in a bathtub. You just can't do it.
How about the general state of not sports journalism, but journalism, Bob? As you have seen some of these giants, you've seen the entire industry change. Well, it was years and years ago, Jon Stewart replaced the network anchorman as America's most trusted news source. And that was years and years ago. Everything has changed another full revolution since then. The state of journalism, as newspapers die and checks and balances die and billionaires ride their phallic symbols into space and Stugatz reads fake SportsCenter tweets and I get fooled by the internet on whether Disney was putting up graphics that were putting up Rotten Tomato scores on Warner Brothers for the Space Jam movie. The state of journalism, as Bob Costas views it, the decay of it, you make what of it?
Well, I think that a lot of good journalism still goes on in broadcast and print precincts. A lot of it still goes on. But there's so much stuff out there, and now the new technology, and it's not all that new anymore, allows people, if they choose, to select their own bubbles and their own echo chambers. So it isn't even necessarily that what they're getting there is always untrue, but it's a selective truth. Fox News, for example, learned or relearned what they already knew, which is that their audience doesn't want to hear anything, even if it's as obviously true as 2 plus 2 is 4, anything that would indicate that Donald Trump is perhaps not worthy of their undying devotion. And so when on election night they simply acknowledged the truth that Biden had won, a portion of their audience migrated to even Trumpier places, Newsmax and OAN. So now Fox realizes, look, we're McDonald's. We're not going to serve you pizza or sushi. This is what you came for. So on Fox News, not everything that's said is untrue. Some of it is straight news reporting. And some of it makes legitimate points from a legitimate conservative perspective. But what they will never acknowledge is the giant elephant in the room, the truth about the unreality and the delusional world of Donald Trump that so many people have bought into. Because if they acknowledge that in a straightforward way, which you don't have to be a Democrat or liberal to see, the numbers of longtime conservative media people, longtime conservative and Republican politicians, the people who have worked closely with Trump both before and during his presidency, all the books that have come out about him, most of those are not coming from left-wing directions. They're coming from clear-eyed people who are centrists or right of center all their lives, but they see this craziness. If Fox were to acknowledge that, or the other various places in right-wing talk radio, whatever, if all those places were just to acknowledge it, which is at this point like acknowledging that the sun rises in the east and sets in the west, it would cost them audience, period. So is everything said on those outlets untrue? No. But they are ignoring a substantial truth because it doesn't fit their business model. And that's true on the other side as well. It's just not true to the same extent. And most importantly, it's not true about a former president of the United States who still holds sway over a huge portion of the electorate, which makes it, even if you can find something that sort of is the same way on the other side, it makes it much more consequential because of the impact it's had on the country and could continue to have on the country.
Back on the record with Bob Costas. He does it better than just about anybody who's ever done it. Debuts Friday, July 30th, 11 p.m. Eastern. You will get it on HBO Max streaming. You will get it on HBO. Looking forward to it, Bob. Always appreciate the time, sir. Good luck with that show. I know it's going to be great.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you, Stugatz. Are things going well on the pirate ship?
It is okay. Stugatz continues to provide content for us by doing things like he just did in the middle of the... He never stop doing that. Can't wait to make fun of him in the next segment. Yes, though. Same freedom you're talking about. We're enjoying carving out a little space for ourselves where we could do what we want.
Yeah, and good for you. Just keep this in mind. You need plenty of orange juice because all those pirates got scurvy aboard the pirate ship. You know, they're sailing and sailing for months and months. Their provisions run low and they get scurvy because they got no vitamin C.
I married scurvy. It's my co-host. Thank you, Bob, for being on with us. Appreciate it.
Hey.
See ya.
Don Lebatard.
Who is the comedian? Is it James Mulvaney? How do you pronounce his...
John Mulaney?
There you go. Thank you. John Mulaney.
$2, yeah.
That's a bad fine. Wow. Everybody started shaking their head.
I mean, he's arguably the most popular comedian right now. James Mulvaney.
Stugatz.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo. Is it John Mulvaney the most popular columnist at Lebatard?
Oh, my God. Comedian.
comedian, Dan. Jesus, get it together.
Excuse me, comedian, my bad.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugats.
This might be a surprising admission for you guys to hear from me, but I'm not actually that smart, and I'm not actually that good at this. What I just do is surround myself with people who can make it look that way. Whether it's my father or either Cody, long lineage of Cody's that birth content, whether it's Stugatz, I decided early on. I heard Bob Costas talking on television on Letterman and said, okay, can't be that good. Gonna go another route. Gonna try something different. Let me see if I can surround myself with people who do some of what Chris Cody and Stugatz have done today. That Emmy mistake on the show sheet, that belongs to Chris Cody. Chris Cody's having a hell of a day. It is not his worst moment today. I believe his
worst.
He was
off by 10.
His worst moment today. I love that Bob corrected us, though. That was so great. Such a great flex. And blamed you when I'm the one who brought it up because I was reading from the research that was incorrect.
The one and the two, very close on the computer.
That's typically how it goes.
Not Chris Cody's worst moment today. What is the context that this moment needs? Because I thought, I marveled. This is how I described it when it happened. If you were not with us in the local hour, first of all, I thought it was the first thing. I thought it was that how Chris Cody began his work week on the air with us, roaring out of the weekend.
The Bob Costas research was how I started.
Roaring out of the 3-day weekend, first time on air. Chris Cody, the way that I described it earlier is it couldn't have been worse if we had stormed into his house at 4 a.m., surprised him while he was sleeping by holding a microphone in his face and just slapping him across the face and getting his first thoughts on whatever. I believe it would have been more coherent than what happened. What is the context that this sound needs, Mike?
Dan, the context that you seek is we were talking about the weird thing that's happening around the Miami Heat, or at least weird compared to the recent history, which is people are leaving the organization. Now, Dwayne Wade and Craig assistants. It used to be that Dave Fizdale would stay with the organization for years, rebuffing overtures for even head coaching jobs. Now, assistants are leaving. The name was uttered. Fizdale was uttered just prior to Chris Cody trying to scan
his brain
for
the name. He couldn't find it. What was the thing that you said from Tahoe? I was trying to think, but it wasn't working or something. It was a great.
We've all been there.
It was a great. It was a great quote where you just said your mind was malfunctioning in a really oafish way. Let's see what we have here from earlier today, and we will now have a competitive. We're going to pair this against what happened to Stugatz during the Costas interview. And you guys, the audience, tell us which one was more unprofessional as a moment.
They realized Riley, I mean, Spo's never leaving. You know, I feel like, what's his name, had a...
Exactly. Keep going. Just keep fight through it.
No, let's just end the segment right there.
I'm so happy with him.
There was roughly 2.5 seconds of silence, which
felt
like an hour.
It was 4 total seconds that ended with the dismount of a curse word. I want to pair that against what it is, the tapestry that Costas was just weaving. Let's put it again next to it.
Right now, in the Hall of Fame, he's in that Allen Iverson room, Bob.
Oh, Jesus.
Allen Iverson room, Bob.
Oh, God.
Let's play them next to each other.
No, let's play that one. Let's just keep playing that one.
Which one? Put it on the poll, please, Guillermo. Which one of the moments was more unprofessional? Stugatz trying to talk to Bob Costas or Chris Cody trying to remember Fizdale's name?
They realized Spo's never leaving. You know, I feel like, what's his name, had a...
Exactly. Start. Keep going. Start. Just keep fight through it.
No, let's just end the segment
Fizdale.
Right there.
Fizdale.
And then there is Stugatz, who immediately, as soon as we went to commercial, he started saying, man, the summer months are the hardest for me. It's so much lacrosse. I'm
Costas makes me nervous. There's a lot of things going on.
I want you to imagine at any point in Costas's career while winning 29 Emmys, imagine something coming out of his mouth that sounded like this.
Right now in the Hall of Fame, he's in that Allen Iverson room, Bob. AI.
In that.
As the kids call them. I love that that is on the heels of you chewing on your tongue, typing with both index fingers to get tricked by a fake SportsCenter account to text me, Todd Gurley Ravens, in the middle of the interview.
Whittingham, give me some of the specifics we pair these against each other again, because it's true. It sounds like a combination. If you can play the Stugatz sound back again, I want you to imagine two things happening here in the middle of Stugatz trying to get this thought out for Costas. One is him being tased while chewing on the side of his tongue, which is halfway out of his mouth, and then him immediately having a seizure as well.
Right now in the Hall of Fame, he's in that Allen Iverson room, Bob.
Whittingham, what happened with the fake account that fooled?
It's just, so he says it was Adam Schefter. So I look at Adam Schefter's Twitter account, couldn't find anything. And so Jess went and tracked down the tweet. Mm-hmm. Here are the red flags on this account. One, the handle, Spots Centra, like the Canadian Sports Center.
But not Sports.
Spots Centra.
But you realize you can read that very, very quickly and think it's...
Mistake number one. Mistake number two. There was no check mark. It was that thing that people do to try and fool people of the white circle that kind of looks like the check mark, but is not. Sign number three, the avatar. It's the SportsCenter logo, but in fairly sizable print above it is the word not. Not a Sports Center. There are three signs. Also, Tony pointed out a fourth, which is that the picture used of Todd Gurley is him in a Rams uniform when he was just in a Falcons uniform. All the red flags, and yet Stugatz is still going, Todd Gurley, Ravens buddy.
Shefty.
Was Schefter referenced anywhere in the fake account?
He just assumed he attributed a fake report to a real reporter because it's in the NFL, and yeah, Schefty probably has got it.
These things are going to happen to you one day, Whittingham, and I promise I will not be so mean
Whittingham,
when they do.
Whittingham, it's not like Twitter was something from your generation.
Right.
Twitter was born while Chris Whittingham was an adult, or close to it anyways. Uh-huh. You don't just start getting tricked by it more. I feel like you have the life experience to know that I got to look for the verified check mark at least.
You were fake Tony Dungy.
Juju just texted me to remind me that Chris Whittingham sent the text to our group on Saturday with the LeBron James fake lower third that Dan was tricked by. So
I just thought that was funny.
What? What?
Law thickens.
You fool.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.